This episode of the Bama Beat Podcast is brought to you by The Shirt Shop and Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order at Zaxby's.com. That's Zaxby's.com. And welcome back to the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Zaxby's. Once again, I'm sitting here with Brett Hudson, the Alabama beat writer for the Tuscaloosa News and ToddSports.com. How are you doing this morning, Brett?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing great. This weather can't keep me down. it's actually much needed, I guess you'd say. But I think what we're going to do is, during this first part, Alabama's coming off a bye week, so we're going to spend the first segment talking about, you know, some statistics that we've both found interesting. Brett's done a lot of research and has a lot of great nuggets for you guys. And then,
by the way, you do have a name. You didn't say that earlier.
Did I not? I just assumed by this point.
You do have a name.
The name is Cecil Hurt. I'm just kidding. This is Clint Lamb. Cecil's not with us this morning. He will be a little bit later when you're as famous and high profile as Cecil is. You get to in high demand, I guess you'd say. So we're looking forward to talking to him a little bit later. But right now, it's just going to be me and Brett. You know what? Great catch, though. I didn't even notice that I didn't say my name.
Yeah.
I guess that's kind of important.
In theory.
Yeah. So, like I said, in the first segment, we're going to be doing some stats. And then in segment two, we're going to be doing some Texas A&M preview.
Yes.
So, I'm going to go ahead and kind of just kick it right off to you, like always, because you've got some great nuggets that I want you to share with our audience.
Yeah. So, the point of what we're doing for this first segment is kind of looking at the numbers and the stats of where Alabama is as it ends its first open week of the season through five games of the season. And I don't know if it's actually the most important statistic that's up for debate. I haven't really thought about it that way, so I'm open to counterpoints and suggestions. But it's undeniable that the stats that Nick Saban is talking about most are time of possession and mostly how it relates to how long his defense is on the field or how many plays they face, which leads perfectly into Content Plug, the story I wrote for the Sunday edition of the Tuscaloosa News. You can still find it on TideSports.com. Kind of diving into the numbers of that, and there's too many stats in here to get to all of them. You just need to read the story. I hate to do that to you, podcast listener, but you just honest to God do.
And it's very well worth a read.
Thank you. So I did. I kind of looked at the numbers with all of the things that Nick Saban had said on the subject, and let me be clear. I'm not qualified to tell Nick Saban he's wrong. That's not my job. But I can't help. I can't help but notice that Nick Saban's kind of talking out of both sides of his mouth on this. So these quotes are in the story too. He's saying we need to control the ball on offense. We need to control tempo and keep our defense off the field, but also our defense needs to get off the field on third down. Defense needs to play better. Then he said that after Ole Miss. Then later in the week, in the open week, he says, well, I don't really see the point in changing things in our offense. We're good at what we do offensively. I don't see the net gain in changing things we do on one side of the ball to benefit the other. But then he later on says that we can do what we're doing, but also control tempo. And I'm not sure how true that is, or at least the players don't necessarily see it that way,
right,
based on quotes that we'll get to later on. So basically, I went into the numbers and tried to find what the numbers say is the reason Alabama's on the field so long, or at least their defense is on the field so long. And it's important because they faced 88 plays against South Carolina, 86 plays against Ole Miss. I looked at the 2017 and 18 seasons. SEC teams that allow a conference opponent to run 85 or more plays in a game, they went 5-6 over those two seasons. So if you do this week over week over week, it's likely to bite you, right?
Absolutely.
Even if you're as talented as Alabama, the track record shows you lose more than you win. It's likely to bite you. So you're trying to fix that. And I honestly think the tempo data shows that the schedule is going to fix a good bit of this, because Texas A&M and Tennessee are two of the slower offenses in the SEC, if not the nation. They're both 80th and below in seconds of possession per play. So think about how long it takes you to run a play. If you're running a play every 19 seconds of possession, you're going pretty quick, right? Because you got to include the time where the play clock is not reset.
Right.
So it's not like you're running 19 seconds of play clock and then the 7 seconds roughly that the play actually takes. So if you're running a play every 19 seconds, you're going pretty fast. You're like Ricky Bobby as an 8-year-old. I want to go fast. But if you're running a play every 40 seconds of possession, you're basically Iowa or Wisconsin. You're going slow. You got a cocktail in your hand. You're having a good time.
Right.
Texas A&M and Tennessee are living that life with the cocktail in the hand. They're going slow. They operate very slowly. So they're unlikely to put up big play numbers. Thus, I think on the season numbers, your tempo is going to go down just by facing Texas A&M and Tennessee, whereas Ole Miss, New Mexico State, and South Carolina are three of the 20 fastest offenses in America by this judgment. So one answer is I just think the schedule is going to help Alabama in terms of its defense not being on the field so much. The other answer was the common... And I don't want to call it a misconception because often it's not, but the common theory when a defense is on the field too long is they're bad on third down, right? Because you allow an offense to run three plays, then they get a new fresh set of downs where they run another three plays, get a new fresh set of downs, and they're on the field forever. Bama's third down defense, and I'm going to double check this stat now that an entire weekend of games have been played. They were in between 35th and 40th, depending on what happened around college football. They're 37th right now in third down defense. They allow conversions 32.89% of the time. Is that living up to the quote-unquote Bama standard? No. Is that the reason the defense is on the field? No. They're 37th.
Now,
they're
not against South Carolina and Ole Miss. I believe they went 8 of 20 and 8 of 18.
Yes.
So I think they were hovering somewhere in the mid 40 percentile.
Yes.
So a little bit higher.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, I guess is to be expected.
Against SEC competition.
Yeah.
Yeah. So third down defense, that's a good caveat. That's a good point. Third down defense probably had something to do with it there. But I think it's more about the situations you find yourself in third down. They're in short down and distance a lot.
Right.
When it comes to third down. And the full percentages are in the story. I'll try to end this filibuster somewhat soon, but the point of the story, I think, is the stat that Saban discusses most is time of possession and how it meshes with how long his defense is on the field on a play basis, not on a time basis, but on how many plays they have to face. And these numbers suggest that the offense holding the ball is not necessarily going to solve that issue. They need to face slower offenses, which they're about to, and they need to be better on first and second down so they're not constantly facing disadvantageous third down and distances. That's what the numbers suggest. What did you think when you read it?
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's a great point. I think that when you add in, I mean, what is, and it might not be something that you have on hand, but I'd be curious to go back and look, would be Alabama's average drive length. Offensively,
I can try to put something together quickly.
Yeah, because I mean, I would think with the way that Alabama scores so quickly,
I can tell you that they've had 34 touchdown drives this year. Half of them have lasted six or fewer plays.
Okay,
that's probably a pretty solid grasp. It's not the exact number, but it's a solid grasp at what you're getting at.
Yeah, and that's kind of, you know, six plays or less. It just seems like, especially in early in some of these games, they're scoring on one of the first few plays.
Yes.
First drive. And then, I mean, that's great from getting a lead standpoint. That's great for, I mean, the defense is fresh at the beginning of the game, so it doesn't matter. But as the game progresses and you're, you know, they put together because of a lack of third down defense when that has been an issue against some of these SEC opponents, and then you throw in, you know, so you're giving up long drives, 12, 13 play drives, and then your offense is out there for four, five, six plays, and then you're right back out there again for another long drive. Penalties has probably had a lot to do with it too. It's allowed defenses or opposing offenses to stay on the field more in situations where they didn't necessarily have to. you know, I think it's a combination of things, but I mean, you get, when you're playing in the heat that Alabama's been playing in, 86 and 88 plays, do you have on hand? You might not, and it's totally fine if you don't. The national average as far as number of plays, maybe in the SEC that teams are running per game, or Alabama, or, you know, really nationally.
Let's pull up my spreadsheet. So the average, not plays per game. I think I can get that somewhat quickly. Maybe, yeah. I think I can get a national average of plays per game. I can tell you the average defense defends. Let's pull this up. The average defense defends 68.6 plays per game. All of that is before last weekend.
Right.
So keep that in mind.
Yeah.
The average defense defends 68.6 plays per game. Alabama's defending 71 plays per game.
Okay, so a little bit higher.
A little bit higher.
Now, granted, you know, and I think but the main thing that I look at is based off of competition. Obviously, when you're playing New Mexico State and Southern Miss, no offense to them, even though I think Southern Miss was, you know, did a pretty good, decent job, is they're not going to be able to sustain drives as well as an offensive team in the SEC.
Yeah.
That you would think. But, you know, when you're talking about averaging 87 between the two SEC teams, I mean, when you're on the field for an extra 20 snaps a game, that might not seem like a whole lot until you're playing it.
And all of this comes in the context that Alabama was basically beaten by a snap count in a national championship game. The first time they lost to Clemson.
Right.
The big stat from that game was Clemson ran 99 plays.
Which is huge.
All of this conversation comes in that context.
Yeah. And the thing is when you combine that, running a ton of plays, what has helped Alabama be so dominant is when they've ran into situations where they've allowed opposing offenses to be on the field for a few more plays a game than, you know, normal, they had the depth to sustain. They were, you know, 2, 3, 4 deep at certain positions, so they could rotate guys and keep guys fresh.
Depth is one thing they don't have.
Exactly. So this is the one year they can't afford to allow, you know, SEC offenses to have 86 and 88 plays.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's what Saban's getting at. And what you're saying is his solution, maybe what he is suggesting would be the solution, isn't necessarily what the solution actually could be.
His solution would work. I don't think it has to be the solution.
Okay.
If Bama wants to run ball control with this offense, I wouldn't.
I wouldn't either. Yeah.
I wouldn't. But if they want to, they certainly can, and it's a defensible argument. Because again, the defensive depth is by far the biggest deficiency this team has. That's not a hot take, is it?
No. I think that's pretty universal.
Okay. So if you want to mask that weakness, then ball control offense is probably what you need to do. And if that's what Bama ultimately does, then it is what it is. I wouldn't do it.
Right.
Not with these weapons out there.
Yeah.
And so that's my two cents on that.
Yeah. And I mean, when you start getting into some of these games and you've tried to turn your offense, especially in the middle of a season, kind of change the philosophy behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's real difficult when you're going against a high-powered LSU offense and potentially Georgia and Auburn. Of course, they looked very pedestrian versus Florida, but you would think by game 12, being at home, they're going to have worked some things out, and they should be a pretty decent offense to go against potentially Clemson later on down the road. Mm-hmm. I know that they've also had struggles, but they should be able to put it together. Way too many weapons, and of course, an elite quarterback. So, you know, I don't know. I guess from the perspective of you're trying to look long term and the teams that you could face, trying to become a ball control offense in the middle of the season, I don't think your defense is set up to really consistently stop LSU regardless, or Georgia, or, you know, some of those teams. So trying to make yourself, I guess you could limit the number of possessions a guy like Trevor Lawrence or Joe Burrow gets.
Mm-hmm.
That's about the only benefit at this point of having that style of offense.
Now, the offensive line has shown growth in recent weeks. So maybe the offensive line is getting to a point where it can become a physical ball control style offensive line. But that remains to be seen. One more stat I wanted to throw out, and before we see if you have any. This was something that was talked about over the bye week. Open week. Jaylen Waddle only has 12 catches on the year. Compare that to 31 from Devontae Smith, 38 from Jerry Jeudy, and 17 from Henry Ruggs III.
With that injury with Ruggs, by the way. He missed most of last game.
Yes. What do you think of that?
I think that it stems probably from what I've seen on film. And granted, you know, I haven't been specifically looking for this maybe as much as I should. But it seems like it's a result of what the defense is giving to Tagovailoa. That was really a huge emphasis in the offseason was, you know, don't try to force things. You don't have to make a big play on every snap.
Can't go broke taking a profit.
Right. So just take what the defense gives you. And when you talk, now granted, that doesn't mean that Jalen Waddle, they're, you know, specifically scheming against him over a guy like Jerry Jeudy or Devontae Smith or Henry Ruggs. But it does seem, especially when you talk about Devontae Smith, a lot of that big game was just, you know, opportunities, not necessarily that were drawn up. And Saban, I think Coach Saban alluded to this. It wasn't that they went into that game saying Devontae Smith's going to have a huge day.
That's the thing that sticks out to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that basic philosophy of the RPO, right? Like the ball goes where the defense isn't.
Right.
And if the defense is where Jalen Waddle is, and that's just tough luck. Now, these numbers are eye-popping. Someone's eventually going to say, these three dudes ain't going to beat us. And then at that point, it's going to be Alabama's choice to either run the ball or let Jalen Waddle win that game for them.
Right.
And what they do on that day, I don't know. Or maybe they find a way to match up Jalen Waddle in an RPO where he can bust a couple of big plays and these numbers look more realistic, especially on a yardage standpoint, where Smith has 537, Jeudy has 488, Ruggs has 361, Waddle's at 197.
Right.
He's not that far removed from Najee Harris at 104, who's obviously a running back. So that number was brought up a lot over the open week, and I'm just not doing anything with it right now. I think that's just a product of the offense. And pretty much everyone on the offense said they know that the ball can go to anyone at any given time thanks to how much they run RPO. And Waddle knows that as well, that his time is most likely coming.
Yeah, and I mean, we kind of knew there had to be an odd man out to some degree.
He is the fourth wide receiver.
Yeah,
on a team that likes to have at least one tight end on the field.
Exactly. And so, you know, granted, you know, kind of, and when you talk about earlier, you were talking about the improvement of the offensive line and the fact that they could be more of probably a ball control offense. I think the ideal situation would be for the offense to be set up where when they need to go ball control, they can, and they can do it successfully. Not necessarily that they have to, or that's their identity offensively.
It's a tough switch to flip, though.
It can be, yeah. Especially, I mean, even in the way you practice. I mean, when you're practicing slinging the ball around, you know, as many times, you know, as they're doing in the games.
Yeah,
I mean, it's hard to be like, hey, offensive lineman, I know we've been taking pass sets literally all day in practice, 5 days a week, but I need you to come downhill.
Cole Kublik talks about this all the time.
Yes, yeah, and that is exactly who I was thinking of when I mentioned that, because I thought that was an excellent point.
It is.
When you talk about where Alabama is at offensively, they're just a team that's going to spread the ball around. I mean, that's just who they are right now, because you have so many weapons. It's a good problem to have, and they can score with literally anybody. So the hope is you get your defense to a point where they can successfully hold a team to, you know, 3-4 scores. That sounds terrible to the average fan, because they're used to Alabama holding, you know, teams around 10 points a game.
But we've had this conversation on a previous podcast. This ain't your granddaddy's Alabama.
Right.
It's a different Bama team. It's not better. It's not worse. It's different.
Yeah. It's just different. And that's a great point. And so I think that, you know, the biggest thing about Alabama's defense right now is you're probably going to give up some scores the way that things are set up. You're going to give up some points in today's college football. Control the things that you can control, which is get better on third down, not make boneheaded penalties that gives the offenses extended opportunities, and those two things should fix itself in a lot of ways, or at least reduce the amount that you're on the field. Is it going to fix the problem completely? Maybe not. So I thought that was pretty interesting. We've kind of ran over a little bit. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back,
if you've got any stats, we'll get those on the other side of the break, and then we'll do Texas A&M. How about that?
Perfect. Cool. So we will be back soon. We appreciate you guys tuning into the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Zaxby's. And welcome back to the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Zaxby's. This is Clint Lamb once again sitting here with Brett Hudson. And Brett, I think you wanted to clarify a little bit on some statistics you found during the break.
Yeah, I just wanted to add a number to a point you made about Bama's defense giving up first downs by penalty. And after this, we'll get to Texas A&M and talk some Ags. But Bama's given up 11 first downs by penalty this year. Only LSU, Arkansas, and Auburn have given up more. And among SEC teams, I'm sure there are more in the nation, but we're keeping this in the context of the SEC. Georgia and Vandy have also given up 11, so they're tied for ninth, but still bottom half of the SEC in this regard. And when you think about giving up first downs by penalty, that's likely going to give you a minimum of three plays you have to defend after that, unless you do so right at the goal line and they score, or you get a turnover right after that, which seems to be unlikely. So that probably, if you're doing that twice a game, which 11 over 5 games suggests, you're adding six plays minimum probably to your plays that your defense has to face, and that's another another good point that you made that we now have a number for.
So, yeah, that's perfect.
There we go. Now let's talk Ags.
I mean, so yeah, you're talking just from penalties adding six plays a game.
That seems to be the case.
Yeah. That's okay, which makes perfect sense, actually. All right, so yeah, let's talk a little bit about the Aggies. Obviously, this game has lost a little bit of its lust.
You don't say.
Yeah, it's been a tough go for Texas A&M the last few weeks. They're still technically a top 25 team, I believe.
What?
Yeah, I think they're number 24 or 25. I think they're number 25 as
well. Gross.
Yeah, they really shouldn't be at this point.
I mean, that's one of those things, like, who else you gonna put there?
Yeah, well, and that's a good point.
It's one of those years.
Yeah. But I do find it interesting. They can provide some problems for Alabama. I mean, they or some difficulty.
They can?
Yeah, I think so. I think defensively, they've been pretty decent. I mean, you talk about when I watched them against Auburn, and granted, Auburn also had to go into College Station. So, you know, and Auburn handled them pretty soundly. I think they only won by 8, 28-20, but the game was really not even that close. But from a defensive standpoint, on paper, it probably looks like Auburn had more success on the ground against Texas A&M's defense than they actually did, due to a 57-yard end-around with Anthony Schwartz, one of the fastest players in college football, if not the fastest. Henry Ruggs fans will differ, but, you know, he's obviously very fast. But
yeah,
when you talk about Booby Whitlow and what he was able to do, he only averaged 3.7 yards per carry in that game. Sean Shivers, the other running back, the true running back, not really a true running back, he's more of a receiving threat, but he's not a receiver carrying the football.
Yeah.
He only averaged 2.3 yards per carry. So from a yards per carry standpoint with the running backs, Texas A&M held up pretty well. And then, you know, they also held Travis Etienne, when they played Clemson, to only 53 yards on 16 carries, which is a 3.3 yard per carry average. So they're pretty stout against the run.
Yeah.
And, you know, now granted, Alabama has kind of been used to being one-dimensional. Some of it, you know, brought on themselves. Some of it, what, you know, defenses have tried to take away in certain instances. But, you know, I do think that I think the line is somewhere in the high teens, as far as, I think it opened up at 18 or 18 and a half, somewhere around there. So still a three score spread.
That's a really good line, I think.
For Alabama?
No, I think it's like accurate.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think it's a very good line.
I think so too. I think that it could be somewhere. I do think that Alabama wins pretty handedly in this game, which we'll get into the reasons why. But I do think that it's very possible that A&M could keep it in the teens. It depends on what Kellen Mond you're getting. That's been the story of really Texas A&M's season.
Yeah.
And there was an argument, you know, last year talking about him as a quarterback and his home versus road split and how good he was at home.
Interesting.
Yeah, and but really, just look at the teams that they played. They went to Tuscaloosa. They went to,
Death Valley.
Yeah, right? Death Valley, I believe. It was another major team.
No, wait, they went
Georgia
this year.
Might have
been Georgia, yeah.
Because I remember when I went back and looked, I was like, man, he's playing the best teams A&M faced all year on the road. Obviously, he's going to not play as well.
Yeah.
And we saw, now granted, that also for this whole home Kellen Mond thing, then you see Auburn, and Auburn was able to pretty much handle him.
Yep.
And contain him, I guess you'd say.
And Clemson handled them pretty well. And this is not the Clemson defense of previous years.
Not even close.
It's a good defense, but it's not what it has been.
Yeah. I mean, and this is kind of off topic. I want to say this real quick because I think you raise a great point. You know, where Alabama has built a sustainable quote unquote dynasty during the Nick Saban era has been their ability to reload, not have to rebuild on defense.
Yeah.
Clemson was faced with that challenge. Cleveland Farrell, Dexter Lawrence, Christian Wilkins, Austin Bryant, all four of your starting defensive linemen, Kendall Joseph, Trey Lamar, your two top linebackers, Trayvon Mullen, Mark Field, your nickel corner. I mean, they just had so many losses on that side of the football, and everybody just assumed Dabo Swinney has Clemson where Alabama is. They'll just reload. And their defense has been okay. But granted, they haven't really played anybody is the big thing, including Texas A&M. When they welcomed Texas A&M, A&M, I think, had just lost Corbin, probably their top option in the running game. Their run game has not been great since under Spiller. He's been okay, nothing special, nothing to write home about. What do you think about – now, granted, I already said that I felt like their defense could potentially cause Alabama a few problems. Is there any other area where you think that they can exploit Alabama?
I don't know that they can exploit Alabama in any other area. The way Texas A&M needs to win this game is basically to run back the Iowa-Michigan game last week, which put a bullet in my head if that happens. But that's the formula, because Jimbo Fisher just – talk to any Florida State fan about Jimbo Fisher's offensive tempo. It is very slow. That's what he does. Not saying it's wrong. It's wrong. It's very wrong. It's very, very bad. But that's what he does. And especially when he's at a talent disadvantage, that's what he does. So he's going to try to turn this into a Big Ten rock fight. That's what I think is going to happen. I think he's going to run slow offense. I think they're going to be snapping the ball with 12 or fewer seconds on the play clock on almost every snap. They're going to be doing a bunch of motions and things like that to confuse the interior linebackers. That's nothing new for Alabama and its fans. They know this two freshmen on the inside. They know teams are trying to do different things to confuse them. And that's basically what Texas A&M's formula is, I think, to limit possessions, to keep it a low-scoring game, and see if they can get a couple of bounces or get the ball at the right time, maybe create a turnover that's ultimately the game-changing play, easy for me to say, and win this game 17-13, 20-17. Something like that. I think that's Texas A&M's model, or at least it has been in Jimbo Fisher's coaching past. I think that's the model. I don't think Alabama allows that to happen, because for all of the whole ball control stuff we talked about in the first segment, this offense is good when it's at tempo. It feels comfortable when it's at tempo. And both, and Tua Tagovailoa said it after the Ole Miss game, there are times where he thinks the offense could have gone faster.
Yeah,
he thinks there were times where they didn't change personnel, they didn't change formation, they were more or less ready to go. They saw Ole Miss's defenders looking to the sideline for different checks and calls, and they didn't snap the ball. That's something that he wanted to work on in the open week. So I think there are opportunities for this offense to go faster than it has in the past. Now, do they get the directive from Nick Saban to slow down? Maybe, and that'll manifest itself over these next 3 weeks before the next open week, but I think that's the model for Texas A&M. So if Bama does what Bama generally does, which is put together two quick scoring drives in the first quarter and they've got 14 points on the board in the first 10 minutes of the game, you can more or less pull that brisket off the smoker.
Right.
We done here.
Right. And I think that the big thing for me in this game, and why I think Alabama is at such a big advantage.
Do you like that brisket thing, by the way?
Oh,
yeah. See what I did there? Howdy.
I'm very – you got to send pictures, man.
I will.
Yeah, it got a high school reunion this weekend. I'm not going to be able to make it out to the game. But
anyway.
But I think the big advantage for Alabama is – what have they struggled with against SEC opponents, especially on defense?
Tempo.
Tempo, stopping the run.
Yes.
They've really struggled stopping the run. A&M does not have the run game. Even against mediocre opponents, they haven't offensively.
They miss Trayvon real bad.
Really bad. And, you know, obviously, like I said, Corbin going down, I think that he added something to that backfield. Now it's really pretty much all Isaiah Spiller, and, you know, we'll see how that ends up turning out for them over the course of the season. But against Alabama, It's going to be very easy. What A&M's going to have to try to do is attack Alabama's secondary, which is the strength of their defense.
Yep.
And, you know, as much as you want to say that the pass rush has been lacking somewhat, especially from the interior, you know, having Terrell Lewis a couple of weeks, you know, he's now a little bit more healthy. Mm-hmm. Anthony Jennings has been playing some pretty good football. You know, I think that they have, you know, Chris Allen, of course, too. Don't want to forget about him. They have the edge rushers to be able to cause Kellen Mond problems. Mm-hmm. I really would hope for Alabama's sake that they're able to provide a little bit more than we've seen, to, at least to some degree, from the interior. If they can, it's going to be a real rough day for Texas A&M's offense. And then just consistently, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if Alabama struggled at least somewhat establishing the run in this game compared to, you know, what they were able to do against Ole Miss, two very different defenses. But I still think that Alabama, you know, A&M's secondary is not very good. You know, passing defense, I don't even know what they're actually on passing defense. On paper, they look pretty good, but if you watch them, they haven't been great. They did, you know, to some degree, keep Bo Nix and Auburn's passing offense in check, but they were dealing with some injuries there.
And what have we learned in the last 3 days?
That's a great point. You know, they're just, Auburn does not have, even in the same ballpark of a passing game as Alabama, and the way that they can spread it out, it's just, it's near impossible to contain all of Alabama's options in the passing game for four quarters. So I think Alabama's going to have a lot of success through the air, probably going to go back to seeing them not having a lot of success on the ground. And then I just don't really see A&M being able to do much. You talk about, you know, it's 24-10 with Clemson. I could totally see it being a 31-10 or, you know, maybe even more than that.
That'd be a cover.
Yeah. Yeah, it would.
Good teams win, but great teams cover.
Yeah.
Never forget.
And them going on the road, you know, Auburn got 28 against them on the road. You know, to think 31, what I feel like would be the offense's floor, probably somewhere in the mid-30s to upper 30s would be more likely. And that's where it can get away from them.
I don't disagree.
Yeah, I think A&M's probably somewhere in that 10 to 14 range.
Yeah.
Granted, this is what will be interesting. How much of Ole Miss's success from J.R. Plumlee on the ground was Alabama just kind of underestimated? Because I know, you know, when I was watching film, he knew he was a dual threat guy, but he was a lot more elusive than I gave him credit for coming out of that game. And you have to wonder if Alabama's defense and the coaching staff kind of thought about him the same way. Plus Matt Corral, they weren't entirely sure that he wasn't playing.
Yeah.
So them specifically preparing for Kellen Mond's legs, do you think that limits his success in, compared to a guy like J.R. Plumlee?
It's possible. Just never forget, white man can jump. Never forget that. Never forget that. When it comes to John Rhys Plumlee, never forget, white man can jump.
He was super athletic. I was blown away.
I still think offensive tempo is the biggest thing to monitor here. If Bama does what I think they're going to do and put up 14 quick because they're operating at a somewhat high tempo and they're throwing the ball around the yard and running the RPO and getting those wide receivers into one-on-ones, I think there is a point total that Alabama can reach where once they reach that, they know the game is over.
Right.
Most of the time, that number is higher just because weird things happen and these are good offensive athletes in the SEC. I think that number is lower in this game because Texas A&M's tempo, because that's kind of what they want to do. And they will go fast when they absolutely have to, but that's not where they make their living. It kind of goes back to the thing that we were talking about based off of what Cole Kubelik says about, you can't just become a smash mouth power football team when you want to be, when you've been running pass sets in practice all day. You can't become an up-tempo team when you want to, when you're running out of huddles and doing slow offensive tempos all the time in practice. I think that, I don't know where that number is. Maybe it's 30 even. Maybe they get to 31 and they can just kick their feet up and take it to the house.
Right.
The offense can. Anyway, the defense obviously has to do its part. I don't know. But I think that's the thing. If Texas A&M controls the tempo of this game, then that's trouble. But if Bama's offense is in rhythm and they get a couple of first downs early and they can move along, then I think the cover is very much on the board here.
Yeah, I agree. So I'll go ahead and ask for your prediction. Who do you think offensively which of these receivers ends up having the big day?
That's a good question.
Who gets lucky enough to win the majority of the time at rock, paper, scissors?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Do we think it's a Jalen Waddle type of game? Do you think you go back to the well with Devontae Smith?
I'll say it's a Judy game.
I think so, too.
I'll say it's a Judy game.
Yeah. I think that, you know, they'll probably play it a little bit safe with Henry Ruggs. Maybe they won't. It's been a couple of weeks. They said he could have played if he would have had to against Ole Miss. I mean, it was more precautionary.
Right.
But, so it could be him. But I think it's, you know, Judy's kind of taken a game, a step back. And just with as talented as he is, you're only going to be able to contain him for so long. So, especially with him maybe trying to add a little bit more attention to Devontae Smith after his record-setting day.
Can I get a Slade-Bolden game in here somewhere?
It's got to be coming at some point.
Can I get
some sort of wrinkles. It's not going to be.
Can I get a game where they run the Slade Cat, the hashtag Slade Cat, like five times, and he runs five times for 36 yards? That's all I want, Nick. I know you're listening.
You know, That's all I want. I've kind of wondered about, you know, when you're trying to not establish the run necessarily, but when you're trying to eat some clock, play more ball control in certain situations, the Slade Cat doesn't sound like a terrible idea. I mean, that style, if you're doing it correctly and from all indications, I mean, he's been really good in practice with it from what I've heard.
So first down Slade Cat, second down Slade Cat, third down Slade Cat, first down Slade Cat, second down Slade Cat, third down Slade Cat, first down Slade Cat, second down Slade Cat, third down Slade Cat, touchdown.
You want to give a man a full drive.
Let's go.
Hey, you know what?
That's what I want.
I'll tell you what. If it ain't broke when they finally do try it, they're going to try it at some point. I think that they haven't really been put in a situation where they've had to throw in a lot of the wrinkles that they actually have.
I would almost bet the mortgage that he's going to throw a pass this year.
Yeah, he's got to. And I mean, more than likely, it probably won't be the first snap that he's in there with the Slade Cat. They'll probably get a little momentum going with that, but at some point he's throwing a pass, there's no doubt.
Slade Cat.
So you know what, if you want to, you don't have to. Do you have a score prediction roughly?
I'll pick a cover. Okay. I don't have the exact number down yet. I got to do that by Wednesday for our game day section. Local listeners and readers can get that in the in-print edition. So that, and it'll be online Saturday morning. I don't have the exact score number down yet, but I think they're going to cover the 18 or whatever it ends up being.
Yeah, and I think that
I'd pick them to cover up to 21, I think.
I was about to say something very similar. I would feel this line, as long as it stays, you know, under 21, I feel relatively good about it. If it starts getting creeped up to that 24 range, you're just going to start talking about
that's when I'm good.
Fade
the tag.
Yeah, and I mean, I could see them winning by 28, you know, or even 30. But I would feel very good. I like where this line's at for if you're wanting to bet on Alabama. Now, granted, they haven't done a great job of covering at all this year, but you know that's so. If you're a gambler out there, that's your little 2 cents for that. Brett, I appreciate you hopping on here with me today, man. We will do this, I guess, next week too.
Slade Cat.
Don't forget about Slade Cat. That's right. All right, man. Well, we appreciate you guys tuning in to today's episode of the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Zaxby's. We will talk to you guys soon.